Morning. Today's daf is daf Kuf Yud Ches in Zvachim. Okay. We're on Kuf Yud Zayin Amud Beis. We got just to the very bottom of the Kuf Yud Zayin Amud Aleph. And the topic for today, for a good part of today, I'd say about half of today, is going to be what do we offer during those 14 years when we're in Gilgal? I guess a general question that the Gemara could have asked but did not ask is why are we discussing it? To the degree in which we're discussing it, meaning really what we're discussing is a historical phenomenon. For 14 years, as they entered into Eretz Yisrael, so they had this makeshift mishkan. It was up in Gilgal, and the bamas were permitted, meaning we were allowed to offer kabbanos in our backyard. And it's a twofold discussion. One discussion is what did they offer on the bama gedola in Gilgal, and what did they offer in their backyard as well. And there are no less than five opinions recorded in the Braisa. Okay, so it's obviously a big discussion, a very big discussion, but it's certainly of interest that the Gemara spends so much time discussing it when it's really a 14-year phenomenon. We know, of course, that with the destruction of the Second Temple, we don't have a Heter Bama. We don't. There's no longer any type of permission whatsoever to offer up on outside of the Beit HaMikdash. The Kedusha of Yerushalayim continues even to this day, and so therefore there is a prohibition to offer even nowadays as well. So it's a general question that we could ask in terms of why such a lengthy discussion on this topic, but it does involve Psukim and the understanding of Psukim and their drushas, and okay, it's a Gufa Shel Torah, it's part of the body of Torah, and obviously that makes it as significant as any other part of the Gemara that we're learning, but certainly it just, you know, it's just an interesting note that we are spending some time. Let's quickly review, because there are so many opinions, and the differences between the various opinions are very nuanced. So let's just quickly review. So I'm going to take one step back, and we'll take a whole bunch of steps forward. We're going to go back to Kuf Yud Zayin Amud Aleph, and we're going to start again Tana Rabbanan halfway down the page, halfway up the page. Tana Rabbanan, we learned in a Braisa. So if it's something which is voluntary, so you can offer it on your little bama, on your backyard, but if it's not something which is voluntary, you cannot offer in your backyard. And as far as your mincha, carbon mincha is concerned, and nazirus, so that you could also offer in your little backyard. Little backyard. You may have a big backyard. But, okay, in other words, your bama katan. Okay, that's the opinion of a mayor. All these positions, I'm just quickly now reviewing the opinions. We're going to go into each one more specifically, so stay tuned. Opinion number two. No, the individual only brought ol and shlamin, period. Okay, that's the opinion of the Chachamim. So he distinguishes himself slightly from Rabbi Meir, and again, we'll get to what the distinguishment is. Now, opinion number three, Rabbi Yehuda Amar Kol Shatzibar Vayachar Makrivim Va'al Moed Shebemidbar Makrivim Va'al Moed Shebegilgal. Look, in the Mishkan we had one tabernacle, right? One Mizbeach. Whatever we offered over there is what we offered in Gilgal. So what's the difference of the 40 years in the desert and the 14 years in Gilgal? So the Gemara says the difference is very simple. The question of whether I can offer my backyard. So in the desert it could not. No one had a backyard in the desert. Everyone was like a little tent. But you know, you understand. So no bamas kitana, so Moshe b'Gilgal, how you are bamas mataros. And for the 14 years that we were at the Gilgal, so bamas were okay. Ubamas shebrosh gagol hayamakri vala olo shlamim. And the only thing they offered it on their bama, and I keep saying it's in the backyard. Here the Bryce that puts it on the rooftop. Okay, wherever it's placed, wherever it is placed, however you only offer olan shlamim. So at this point in time, let's just make the point. Rashi makes the point. So I'm just going to reiterate what Rashi says. These opinions are sounding awfully similar to one another. Doesn't seem to be much difference between what we just read in the name of Rabbi Yehuda and opinions 1 and 2. Meaning, look at opinion number 2. The only thing they offered is Olan Shlamin. Look how Rabbi Yehuda just ended his sentence. The only thing they offer is Olan Shlamin. So, like, where's the difference between the Rabbi Yehuda position and the previous two positions? So Rashi points out, as far as what they're offering on their Bama Katana, the answer is nothing. There is no difference. Meaning, Olan Shlamin, and that's it. Voluntary offerings. The only difference lies in what do you offer on Gilgal? Meaning when you go to Gilgal and you offer something in Gilgal, what can you actually offer over there? So the first two opinions, Rav Meir and the Chachamim, they don't say it, but Rashi tells us, but you hear it from Rabbi Yehuda. Because what Rabbi Yehuda says is there's no difference between Mishkan in the desert and Gilgal. Oh, okay, fine. So once he makes that statement, there's no difference. So the first two opinions, meaning Rav Meir and the Chachamim, are saying, no, they're different than one another. Right, so we'll see this later, we'll explore this more later, but just understand, it's a twofold debate. It's one debate about what they're offering in the backyard, it's another debate of what they're actually offering up in Gilgal. So according to Rav Yehuda, they're offering everything up in Gilgal, much like they did in the Mishkan. Opinion number four, V'chachamim amrim kol shatzibar makrivim ba'ol moed, shebemidbar makrivim ba'ol moed shebegilgal, right, v'kamakan lo kar v'yachid ela olu shlamim belvad. Again, starting to sound more and more the same. The Chachamim almost are identical to the Chachamim. I know that sounds confusing. It's a little bit confusing. But remember now, in this Brisa being presented to us, the second opinion was the opinion of the Chachamim.
Why is the opinion of Chachamim split like two and four?
Right. Okay, so the Gemara is going to ask that question. The Gemara is going to be bothered. There's got to be a degree of difference. There's got to be some sort of separation between the two of them. Otherwise, it would not be presented as two separate opinions. And the way it's presented, it sounds exactly the same. So again, the Gemara is going to deal with that as well. And finally, number five, Rabbi Shimon Omer, Av Tzibor Lo Hikriva El Psachim, on the Tzibor, on the communal Bama in Gilgal. So they offer the Karban Pesach and Chovah Shekavu Lehem Zman and any obligation which is time-bound obligation. Mm-hmm. Obligations that are not time-bound, for example, I'll give one, Par Helm Dover Shel Tzibor. Let's say the majority of the community is sin. And now we have to bring a special Chatas of Par Helm Dover Shel Tzibor. In Horios, we spoke about this at length. So according to Rabbi Shimon, not during those 14 years.
So the two extremes seem to be Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon. Right?
Okay, yes. So yeah, and everyone else has some sort of middle position. Okay, so now we're going to continue. We're now on the top of the Amud Beis, and we're going to continue in the Gemara, and we're going to go through each opinion now and analyze and source and have a better understanding of each position. So we start off, number one, my time under Rav Meir. So what is Rav Meir's position? The Amar Kar, the Pasuk says like this. When Parshas Re'eh, in Parshas Re'eh, the Pasuk says, Lo sasim kechol asher anachnu osim po hayom, ish kol hayashar be'enav. Don't do like we're doing over here. This is what Moshe tells the people. Over here, ish kol hayashar be'enav. Everyone does whatever is right in their eyes. Now, as Rashi points out, Moshe is not talking about right now, meaning as he's speaking, because as he's speaking, they're in the desert. And they're in the desert, and no one can offer a carbon in the privacy of their own home, or behind their tent, but rather you have to go to the Mishkan, and you have to offer in the Mishkan. So, as Rashi points out, what Moshe Rabbeinu is saying is that when you go into Eretz Yisrael, there's going to be a little bit of a 14-year period where you can do what you want. Ish kol yashar be'enav. Okay. So, asher anachnu osim po hayom. Amar la Moshe Yisrael, ki ailisu la'aretz, so here. When you go into Eretz Yisrael, yashrus takrivu. Your yashrus, meaning he's playing, it's a play on the pasuk. Ish kol asher yashar be'enav. Anything which is yashrus, anything which is voluntary, that you can bring in your backyard. Chovos lo takrivu, but not obligations. So, your ola, your shlamim, voluntary offerings, that's good. Karban chatas, out of the question, no way. Menachos and nezirus yashrus nenhu. Now, in Reb Meir's position, that also includes a mincha offering and the nazir offering. Nazir offering, of course, is the most interesting of all these offerings. The question on the table really is, when you're a nazir and you finish your nazirus, you have to bring karbanos. Is that voluntary or is that an obligation?
You have to go in nazir in the first place.
How about this? We can look at it one of two ways. Right? On one hand, when you become a nazir, was that an obligation or is that voluntary?
Voluntary.
Voluntary. Correct answer is voluntary. You don't have to be a nazir. In fact, according to some opinions in the Gemara, it's frowned upon to be a nazir. But fine, but you decide you want to be a nazir. Nazir is just really a form of neder. Mm-hmm. It's just a making a voluntary commitment that I'm not going to drink wine and, you know, all the other rules of nazirus. So from inception, obviously nazirus is voluntary. But then, what happens is that when you finish your Naziros, now you have to bring Karbanos. Okay, so which way are we going to go with it? We can go one of two ways. So Rav Meir says, I see it as being a neder. It's a voluntary offering. Now, mind you that when you finish your Naziros, one of the Karbanos that you need to bring is a Karban Chatas. Oh. So it's interesting. We have a Karban Chatas which has a quality to it that may be a neder. It's unlike any other Karban Chatas. By all other Karban Chatas, it's not a neder. It's an obligation. I sinned. I have to bring a Karban Chatas. But by Naziros, however, you could make the argument, and Rav Meir's proposing it, that we're going to view it like a neder. Okay.
Is that like a similar to Chatas Nachshon category?
Yes. Yeah, right. It's similar. Similar. Chatas Nachshon we can't discuss because that was a one-time phenomenon. Correct. Correct. So that's the opinion of Rav Meir, that included in this yashrus, in this voluntary offering, is going to be your nazir. So, and what the Chachamim say? First of all, mincha, no menachos. No menachos be offered in your backyard. Okay? Rashi says he learns it out through Psukim. Rashi takes us through the drashas. We're not going to go through the Rashi right now. But just know that it's based on a series of drashas. According to the Chachamim, no mincha offered in your backyard. And what about Nazirus? Chovos ninhu. The Chachamim take the other side of the coin. No. When you're a Nazir and you bring Karbanos at the end, that's not voluntary. Of course it's true. When you started your Nazirus, that's of course voluntary. But now that you finish, it's not a question of, well, I'm electing to bring Karbanos. No, you're not electing. Now that you're a Nazir, you have to bring Karbanos. So the Chachamim say that Naziris is considered a Chova, and therefore it doesn't fall under the category of Yashros.
According to Chachamim, a Nazir could never be relieved of his...
During those 14 years.
Oh, he was locked in.
Correct. During those 14 years. So, Arma Shmuel. Now, we have a basic debate between Rav Meir and the Chachamim in terms of how to view the carbon of a Nazir. Is it a voluntary, or Yashros, or is it an obligation, Chova? Now remember that when the Nazir finishes his Naziris, he has to bring the following Karbanos. He has to bring a Karban Shlamim, he has to bring a Karban Ola, and he has to bring a Karban Chatas. Three Karbanos. Maybe what we could do is we could take a blend of the two opinions. Meaning maybe we could say, well, maybe some of the Karbanos are viewed as voluntary and some of them will be viewed as obligation. And the obvious way to divide it, obvious, is that the Shlamim and Ola, they're more voluntary. The Chatas is more obligatory. Look at the Chatas by its very nature. The Chatas is, in general, an obligatory carbon. So maybe we'll take a blend of the two, a synthesis of the two positions. I'm a Shmuel, so that's what Shmuel's going to do. Now, just I'm going to telegraph the Gemara's next punch. What Shmuel's going to do is that Shmuel's going to try to separate the Karbanos of a Nazir. He's going to make two attempts to separate. The first attempt doesn't go well. Second attempt goes better. So here's the first attempt. I'm a Shmuel. Machlokes b'chatos v'asham, ava ba'olos u'shlam in divrei akol yashros nenu. So the first way he says it is that when it comes to the olam u'shlamim of the Nazir, everybody agrees. Everybody meaning Rav Meir and the Chachamim. They both agree that's voluntary. That's Yashrus. The Chatas is subject to the debate between Rav Meir and the Chachamim. The Karve. Okay. So most of Rabbah. So Rabbah hears this and Rabbah says that doesn't sound right. Doesn't sound right because we're going to see it later on. Tomorrow's daf. Yep. Second side of tomorrow's daf. So we're going to see the Brisa says like this: Chazav shokachumas lachmei toda noagim bebama gedola veinohagim bebama katana. It says that you have the chazav shok; those are the parts of a karban shlamim, the general karban shlamim, and the chum of lachmei toda, four loaves that are taken off the 40 loaves that are given to the kohanim of your karban toda. So noagim bebama gedola, they apply to bama gedola veinohagim bebama katana, but they don't apply to bama katana. Now, what is absent from this list? Veilu hazroa b'sheila. The cooked leg of the Nazir. It's called the Zorah B'Sheila. So Shaira, it's not in that list. So in other words, whoever's the author of this Braisa, we don't know right now, but whoever it is, clearly is of the opinion, you don't bring the carbon of a Nazir. Specifically, which carbon? Zorah B'Sheila. What's that coming off of? The Shlamim. So the author of this Braisa is of the opinion, I don't bring the Shlamim. The Nazir doesn't bring a Shlamim. Who is that? So fine. So if there is, according to you, Shmuel, you said, well, when it comes to the Ola Shlomim, there's no debate about that. Everyone agrees you bring it. Well, if everyone agrees you bring it, so then who's the author of this braisa? The answer would be nobody, but that can't be. So the Gemara is fine. So the Gemara expresses exactly this question. Who's the author of this braisa? So the Gemara says, okay, fine. Okay, so that was attempt number one. I told you attempt number one is not going to go so well. And here's attempt number two. Amar Shmuel machlokes b'olav shlamim. Yeah. The debate between Rav Meir and the Chachamim is regarding olin shlamim. Aval b'chatas v'asham divrei hakol chovos ninu v'lo karvei. When it comes to the chatas of a nazir, everybody agrees. The Chachamim Rav Meir, that's under the category of chova. That's an obligation. Since that's an obligation, a nazir cannot bring it, period, during those 14 years in Gilgal. Because that's a chova. And you're only allowed to bring, both according to Rav Meir and the Chachamim, you're only allowed to bring yashrus, voluntary offerings. The chatas of a nazir is not a voluntary offering according to everybody. What is on the table for discussion? The ol and the shlamim. The ol and the shlamim of a nazir, now that's up for discussion. According to the Chachamim, that's also an obligation. That they are, if you will, attachments to the chatas. Just like the chatas is an obligation, the olan and the shlamim is also an obligation as well. And Rav Meir says, no, we could separate. The olan and the shlamim of the nazir, they are more voluntary-like, therefore they could be brought, and the chatas you're not going to bring. It does really beg the question, what would be the point of bringing the olan and the shlamim if you can't bring your chatas? Okay.
From a technical standpoint, is your nazir over if you bring two-thirds?
Your chatas, really, chatas, everything hinges on the chatas.
It's not really your obligation.
I don't think so. It's been a while since we learned Masech Nazir, but I don't think so.
So from time Rabbi Meir, even you bring the shlamim of a nazir.
So according to
bring the chatas of a nazir.
Right. So according to Rabbi Meir, you'll bring your shlamim and your ola, but you won't bring your chatas.
Well, it's less animals to take to the base of
nature. I'm not sure. By the way, I want to state for the record. Okay, then I don't remember. How many of the karbanos you need to bring in order to terminate your naziris? Intuitively, I would tell you have to bring the chatas, but that's just intuition. Okay. Amar Mar. Okay, so good. So what we have done now so far is we've explored the first two opinions in the Braisa. We have Rav Meir down, we have the Chachamim down. And the difference between them, the two of them, is really subtle. It's really all about the nazir and mincha as well. Meaning, is nazir considered voluntary? Is nazir considered obligatory? Okay? But essentially, though, aside from that subtle difference, they're basically on the same page. You only are allowed to bring yashrus, you're only allowed to bring voluntary offerings into your backyard. Okay, fine. Amar mar v'chacham amar min kol shatzib makrim v'omoed. So then we go to the opinion of the Chachamim. Now remember, the Chachamim said that Oa Moed is Gilgal. Meaning whatever we brought in the Mishkan, in the Midbar, that's what we're bringing in Gilgal. It's the same thing. So, Mayhu Derabbanan. Okay, so Amar Krav. So the Gemara says like this. Ish ayashar be'inav yaseh. Ish yashus hu delikrov. Chovas olikrov. So what the Chachamim do is they put together the word Ish and Yashar. Individuals are limited to bring voluntary offerings, right? That's ish hayashar. So ish hayashar beinav yaseh, ish yashar sudilikrav, chovas olikarev. So when it comes to individuals, we're going to make a distinction between voluntary versus obligation. The tzibur. But when we talk about the tzibur, meaning the communal mizbeach, the one found in Gilgal, afilu chovas likarev, there you could bring everything, even chovas as well. Okay. Rav Yehuda. Okay, so that's the opinion of the Chachamim. So now it comes out that according to the Chachamim, basically, Gilgal is no different than the Mishkan and Midbar. Gilgal serves basically as your central Mizbeach, where you could offer everything. The only thing you as an individual are limited from doing is that when you offer in your backyard, you can only offer voluntary, you can't offer obligatory. But if you happen to have obligatory offerings, a chatas or any other obligatory offering, you can take it up to Gilgal. Rabbi Yehuda, amalacha, kiksiv hayashar, be'einav hu dechsiv. Av abdabam gedola, filu chovas namili karev. So, and what's Rabbi Yehuda? We are now up to opinion number 4 in the Braisa, right? The opinion of Rabbi Yehuda. Right, Gemara, for some reason, okay, inverted it. I don't know why. All right. We have to opinion number 4. It's the Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda Melchal Ki Ksiv Hayasher Abeinav Udichsev. Aval Baba Magdol Afilu Chovas Nam Likarev. So the Gemara says, Ela Haksiv Ish. What do we do with the pasuk of Ish? Lav Lamemer Di Ish Yasher Su Likarev HaChovas Lo Likarev. So the Gemara says, so what do you do with the pasuk of Ish? Because Ish seems to be minimizing. So the Gemara says, no. Ki Ksiv Ish LaHakshir Sazar. So the Gemara says, no. According to Rabbi Yehuda, the word Ish tells me that even a non-Kohen can do the Avodah. So the Gemara says, we already knew that. Zar, mi vizaraka kohen es adam al mizbeach Hashem. What do you mean? It's very clear that a non-Kohen can do the Avodah. The only time you need a Kohen is when you have mizbeach Hashem. So Mao detem, the Gemara says, no. Libai kadosh becharet kemi kara kamash malan. The Gemara says, no, it's not true. Because I might have thought, a very good Havamina, I would have thought that when we're in Gilgal for those 14 years, maybe it's a throwback. What did we learn? We learned that before Mishkan, before the Midbar, who can do the Avodah? Only Bechoros can do the Avodah. Okay? And then the Mishkan is set up, and now we know it was transferred. Bechoros no longer do the Avodah, now it's the Kohanim that do the Avodah. Now we get the suspension of 14 years. So as a Havamina, I would have thought, let's go back. And let's now have the avoda only being done by Bechoros. So even if I had the pasuk of Zaraka Kohanes Adama Mizbech Hashem, I would have thought that only Kohanim, but on the Gilgal time in those 14 years, we're back to Bechoros. That's what the Torah has to go out of its way to tell us. That's not true. Anyone can do the avoda. Okay. Now the Gemara is going to ask the question, which I told you the Gemara was going to ask earlier, which is, the Chachamim and the Tanakhama seem to be of the same position. Meaning, I told you, there are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 opinions in the Braisa. Opinion number 2 is the Chachamim, which said that the only thing they offered on the backyard was Olin Shlamim. Then we have opinion number 4, which is the Chachamim, which is the only thing they brought in the backyard was Olin Shlamim. What's the difference between the two positions? Chachamim Hainu Tanakhama, Amar Papa Kirvan Nesachim, Bemidbar Ikabenayo. And so Rapapa says, subtle difference. You don't even read it in the Braisa. Meaning you'll read the Braisa a number of times and you won't see this inside. The issue is, do you bring Nesachim or do you not bring Nesachim in together with your Karban? Okay? This Rashi reviews for us that which we already saw together. And that is, it really touches on another more basic question. In the desert, did we bring Nesachim or did we not bring Nesachim? What's the issue? Nesachim is a mitzvah. Every time I bring a carbon, I have to bring its accessories, wine, oil, and flour, Nesachim. So what's the issue? So I already explained this. We're going to go over this again. Where's Nesachim introduced to us? Where in the Torah do we have the Parsha of Nesachim? Right? So the answer is Shlach. Parsha Shlach. Right? Right after the Meraglim, the Torah says, Kisavola, it's when you go into the land of Israel. So I'm going to introduce this idea. It's called Nesachim. Okay? Simple read of the Psukim is that Nesachim weren't offered in the desert. Okay, that's a simple read of the Psukim. So if that's the case, so then, Kisa of all arts, when you go into the land, you're going to bring Nesachim. So, not those 14 years that were in Gilgal, because we're not there yet, meaning we're in the land of Israel, but we don't have the Mishkan set up. So it's Nesachim is being introduced for when we start with Shiloh, in those 369 years of Shiloh. That's one way to do it. The other way to do it, however, is the argument that we brought the Nesachim even in the desert as well. Why is the Parsha Nesachim introduced in Shlach with Kisavo al Aretz? So that's to tell us that even during those 14 years, we're going to bring Nesachim as well. That's what the Kisavo al Aretz is coming to teach us. One other point, just to make sure we're clear on, although this point is not that clear. Well, who says which? Meaning, we know we have the Chachamim, the opinion number 2, and then we know they have the Chachamim, opinion number 4. Who maintains that you bring the Nesachim? Who maintains that you don't bring the Nesachim? So again, if you look at the Braisa, it's really unclear. They're both essentially saying the same thing. So Rashi's of the opinion, I don't know if anyone argues with Rashi, but Rashi's of the opinion, we're going to say that it's the second Chachamim, opinion number 4, who are maintaining that they're the ones who say that you bring the Nesachim. Rashi writes, Ella, I'm just going to take a little snippet out of Rashi. Ella litfuye ad rabbanan kamai asu. If you have an opinion being expressed in the Brisa, which sounds the same, the second time it comes along, it's coming to add to the first. Meaning that you have to assume. You have to assume that the first is kind of like of a baseline opinion, and then when you have a second opinion which resonates, it sounds like saying the same thing, that second opinion is adding to the first opinion. So Rashi therefore maintains that it's the chachamim of Rabbi Yehuda, I guess you want to call it. Right? It's opinion number four. It's that chachamim who add nesachim to the discussion. We're continuing the Gemara. Amar Rabbi Shimon, Omer v'chulei. My time is Rabbi Shimon. What's the reason behind Rabbi Shimon? Okay. Rabbi Shimon's the fifth and final opinion. Now, if you look back on the bottom of Kuf Yud Zayin Amud Aleph, Rabbi Shimon Omer, Afti Bar Lo Kirva Ela Psachim V'Chol V'Shekavu Lahem Zman Karm Pesach. Okay. I told you before. It bears repeating. The Karm Pesach is a tzibur obligation. It's a communal obligation. Unlike your typical tzibur obligation, where your typical tzibur obligation is one carbon on behalf of all the people, like the ola that's brought every day, the carbon pesach, we all bring a carbon pesach, but still it's a chovas tzibur, it's an obligation on the community. Where does Rabbi Shimon get this from? The pasuk says, "Vayyosu b'nei Yisrael asa pesach v'Gilgal." Okay, fifth parak of Yahushua. We bring the carbon pesach in Gilgal. Okay, so it's our first year in Eretz Yisrael. We are now open up shop in Gilgal for the 14 years that we're going to be stationed in Gilgal. And for that first year, we bring the Karban Pesach. Okay. So Rabbi Shimon says, that's my source. So the Gemara says, what? That's your source? Well, that's not a source. That's a pasuk in Yahushua. But what do you get from that? So Pshita, the Gemara says, it's obvious. Of course we offer the Karban Pesach in Gilgal. Elaha kamash malan dechovos ke'en pesachu dekrav. So the Gemara explains, no. According to Rabbi Shimon, the Torah is not just telling us, the Navi is not just telling us that they offer Karban Pesach, it's setting a precedent. You're going to offer in Gilgal anything which is Pesach-like. Or what features of the Karban Pesach do we have? Number one, it's a communal offering. Number two, it's time-bound. It's set by the calendar. 14th day of Nisan, I bring the Karban Pesach. So halav kena pesach lo krav, and if it's not pesach like, so in other words, even if it has one of the two, that's no good. Now you're not going to have a voluntary offering that is date bound, okay? But you will have obligatory offerings that are not date time bound. For example, we'll go back to what I said earlier today: par helm davishol tzibor, right? I have a chata tzibor, which the community needs to bring, but it's not set by the clock, it's not set by the calendar. So according to Rabbi Shimon, you cannot bring that on Gilgal. That does not go up on Gilgal. The idach mi bayle lechadur Rav Yochanan. Now, for all the people who argue with Rabbi Shimon, and it's a long list of people, Rabbi Meir, the Chachamim, the Rabbi Yehuda, Chachamim Part 2, right? So with all those people, so what are they going to say? Don't look at that story. There's another halacha that we get over there. A different halacha altogether, and that is, if you're an Arel, if you're uncircumcised, you're going to get sprinkled with the paraduma. Okay, now let me take a couple of minutes explaining what's going on over here. First of all, what's the issue? And then what do we learn? How do we learn this out from Gilgal? The issue is like this. If you were Tamei Mei, so in order to get Tahor, in order to be able to go to the base of Mikdash, and order for Karbana, so you need a Tahara. Tumas Meis, how do you get rid of your Tuma? So Parah Aduma. On the third and the seventh day, you're going to get sprinkled with a combination of the ashes of the Parah Aduma together with the Mayim Chaim, the spring water. You get sprinkled on day three and day seven, and that's it. On day seven, you'll tov on the mikvah, and you're good to go. By that evening, you're good to go. Okay? That we all knew. What if you're not circumcised? Now, not being circumcised
doesn't affect your
tumah tahara whatsoever, right? You're just simply not circumcised. Can you get sprinkled with the parah aduma if you're not circumcised? So this issue is not brought up at all in the Torah, but it's subject to a debate. And all the people who argue with Rabbi Shimon will say that's what we learned from the story of Gilgal, that you can get sprinkled even though you're not circumcised.
Would have argued otherwise, and why?
You could argue that if you're not circumcised,
that's command from Hashem. On the eighth day, you have to be circumcised. I don't understand.
Is it because you have done one mitzvah aseh and you're going to do another mitzvah aseh?
Right, what's a svara?
Then they're both mitzvah aseh that has parah.
I hear you.
They had parah aduma in the desert, right? And they weren't.
Wait, I'm going to explain all this. I'm going to explain the history in just a moment. But what's the svara? I know this whole issue came up in Yevamos in Perek Ha'arel, the chapter that deals with being uncircumcised. I don't remember. Okay. Now let's do a little bit of history together so you understand how we learn this halacha from the whole story of Gilgal. Okay, and we'll go through Rashi. Rashi goes step by step over here. Rashi starts with the words Arel, the Divra Maschos Arel. It's more than halfway down on the page, and Rashi writes like this. We learn it from here. Rashi says, "Dichsev," because look, the pasuk says, "Vayasu es Pesach bil Gilgal." Okay, they made the Karban Pesach in Gilgal. Oh, good. Congratulations. Now, it's not that we just did the Karban Pesach, but we did it correctly. Meaning, all the Jews received a milah. Remember, you need a milah in order to bring Karban Pesach. That we know for a fact. That the pasuk says. You need milah in order to kol aro lo yochal bo. If you're a non-circumcised person, you cannot participate in the Karban Pesach. And we're also going to assume that we did so in a state of tahara. We were all pure. Now, leaving the desert, we were neither. We were neither circumcised nor were we pure. Rashi goes and makes both points. Veruban areilan ayu bemidbar. Now, as far as being uncircumcised. No circumcision in the desert. Dechsev lamalu, lamalu. That's fine. The Torah tells us we did not receive a circumcision in the desert. V'amina b'yavamos basar ben nisan sha'avus ha'yardein lamalu mishum chusod archa. Now, on the 10th day of Nisan, we're crossing the desert. So you're talking about now a small window of opportunity. 10th day of Nisan, we cross the desert. Sorry, we cross the Jordan River. And at that point, we did not yet receive a milah. Chusha de orcha. Traveling is exhausting business. Okay. Ela bechatzrei hu damahol. We received our milah on the 11th day. Okay, now this is going to obviously serve as a challenge. We only first got our milah on the 11th day of Nisan. The Karban Pesach has to be brought only but 3 days later. Okay. V'yishtachach de tamei mesim. Additionally, Rashi points out there's another problem, which is we're also Tameh. Shayu Bahem, Sharei Ruban, Tameh Mason. Most everybody was Tameh Mace. Hayu Shemesu Avasem Kolarbim Shana Ben Midbar. Look, right, it was all generation 2 coming out of the desert, which means generation 1 died.
When they died, they buried themselves
first. As I was preparing this Rashi, Aaron, I'll be honest with you, as I was preparing Rashi, I had the same thought myself. Right, that. What Aaron points out is that the Gemara in Tanis, I think so, that says that we weren't buried, we buried ourselves, meaning we dug our own graves and we went in and...
We got up to every night.
Right, right. It's a good point.
That's why we like two bars.
Okay. So, Shayu avasim kol abim shana b'midbar v'nitmu b'hem v'im lo kiblu hazah v'nitaru ba'ar lo san ein lahem shaus lahazos mishamalu. So here's the obvious problem. You can't wait to get a milah and then do the hazah. There won't be time for everything. If we only got the first sprinkling on the 11th day of Nisan, only waiting until after the milah, sulo mati zman hazah shnia ad yom chamisha asar. So we're not simply going to have enough time to do a second sprinkling. And we need it to have been done by the 14th day. Before the why, just the what. I'm just dealing with the what right now. So it's got to be clear that they started the sprinkling process before the milah. So just the whole point of the story of Gilgal is to teach us that you can get sprinkling with the paraduma prior to your milah.
Do you mean to say that if the whole community is tame, you don't need to worry about making a tahara for 40
So Rashi says, that's the beginning of the Rashi says that the whole, we're going to walk into the story assuming that Gilgal, we did everything correctly. We did it both in a state of Tahara and we did it in a state of Mila. That's what Rashi says in the beginning. That's the whole point the Torah is trying to, the Navi is trying to explain to us, that it was done correctly. And then once you deal with the logistics, you realize, oh, wait a second, you're right. They can't start the Tahara process after the Mila, there won't be time. Okay.
During the desert, there was only one Pesach, the very first Pesach.
That's correct. Pesach. That's correct. Only the first. That's correct.
And the first Pesach, there was no paraduma.
Right.
The very first one, they were too much.
They were in Egypt.
No, no, no. But one time in the desert, they offered the Karm Pesach.
So they did two, really. One in Egypt.
Well, right. The Pesach Mitzrayim.
Okay. Pesach Mitzrayim, they were in the state of Tumah. How did they clear it?
Good question. Good question. Well, I mean, he's a Jew. He just can't bring the Karban Pesach. But for all intents and purposes, he's a Jew.
He could be the Pesach.
Correct. That's correct. That's absolutely correct. So that's right. That's where Rashi starts off the whole discussion by saying we're going to assume they were not B'tumah for Gilgal. That is in the desert. So fine. So like we're struggling up here. Maybe they brought it into the state of Tumah in the desert, perhaps.
Yeah, maybe the first one.
If there's a majority of the people that are Tumah, can you, I seem to remember, bring the Kodah?
Correct, absolutely correct. But we're going to assume that in Gilgal they were in a state of Tahara. All right. Tanit Tanakama de Ravada Ba'ava, Ein Bein Bamagdola, Bamagtana, Ela Pesach, Vechovas HaKavul HaMzman. Okay, so a Braisa was taught in front of Rav Azar bar Ava, and the Braisa reads that the only difference between Bama Gadol and Bama Katana is Karban Pesach and Chovas HaKavul HaMzman. Skip the parentheses. So Amar Leit Titagein Misnasech Ba'olas Chova. Okay, we're obviously making a contrast over here. So if you're making a contrast, there has to be something obligatory and something voluntary. That works in the world of Ola. In the Karban Ola world, you have your obligatory Karban Ola and your voluntary Karban Ola. So the Gemara says, because in the Chatas world, you don't have that. You don't have a distinction between obligatory versus voluntary. So the Gemara says, well, you could have made such a distinction by the Mincha offering. So the Gemara says, no kesav rein mincha b'bama. The author of this braisa is of the opinion that there's no mincha by a bama, or maybe I'll say it a little bit differently, Rav Ada bar Ava is of the opinion that there's no mincha in a bama, so therefore he couldn't use mincha as that which separates. Okay. Ba'ol shilo. Okay, we're moving on now. All right, so we have discussed prior to the Mishkan, the period of the Mishkan, the 40 years of the Mishkan. We now have spent a considerable amount of time discussing the 14 years in Gilgal, what they actually brought, what were they allowed to bring in Gilgal versus what they can bring in their backyards. And now we move to Shiloh. So, Baal is Shiloh. Manani Mila Amar Rabbi Chiya Baraba Amar Rabbi Yochanan Kasav Echad Omer. Now, sorry, let me just set this up. The Manahani Mila is going on. What Shiloh was actually constructed of? The Mishnah tells us, going all the way back to the Mishnah of the beginning of the Perek. So the Mishnah says that Shiloh was constructed of stone floor, and a fabric top. So it was kind of like a tent. Kind of like a house, kind of like a tent.
It was halfway.
Half. So Menahani Mila Amar Rabbi Chiya Bar Abba Amar Rabbi Yochanan, that's what the Menahani Mila is going on. And the Gemara says, Kasav Echad Omer Ve'avesem Beis Hashem Shiloh. The Kasav Echad Omer Ve'itosh Mishkan Shiloh. Ohel Shekein Ba'adam Uksiv Ve'imaz Be'ol Yosef Ve'shevet Ephraim Lo Bachar. So some psukim call it a tent, some psukim call it a house. It's both. So the Gemara says, "Haketsa lo haisa sham tikra ella avanim el matan v'yirios melamalan v'yaisa menucha." So it was stone on the bottom, curtain on the top, half house, half tent. And what's the idea behind it? The idea behind it is that it's somewhere in between, meaning that there is some permanence to it. 369 years. Right, this great country that we live in right now is, you know, I remember the bicentennial, right? There's most people here in this room. So just 200 years, and we feel like America's been here forever. 200 years. Shiloh's been there for almost twice that much. And And so it's, on one hand, it has some sense of permanence to it, and on the other hand, it's not Yerushalayim. Okay, so that's why Shiloh, the actual construction, speaks to that idea of being some level of permanence. So the halacha is that to eat your kachim, you just have to see Shiloh. It's a funny halacha that really does not apply to Yerushalayim. In Yerushalayim, you're circumscribed to the walls of Yerushalayim. You can only eat your kachim kalim, that is, only when you're in the walls of Yerushalayim. In Shiloh, you have this very interesting halacha that you can see Shiloh, and that's good. There are no walls around Shiloh. You just have to have an ability to see Shiloh.
But how do you do the sacrifice?
No, sacrifices have to be done in the Mishkan itself. But in terms of eating, so the Gemara, that's Gemara's the very next point. The Gemara says, maybe you would have thought that even if you could see Shiloh, I could do the avoda, actually shech the carbon. I'm Rav Yonah, I'm a crush. Shamtala v'shamta aseh. No. The Torah is very clear that you have to actually offer it in Shiloh. So the heter of re'iyah, your allowance of seeing, is for the eating of your carbon. Rav Avdimi bar chasa amar kra v'lo ta'anas Shiloh. He quotes a pasuk. The pasuk says v'lo ta'anas Shiloh. Now, I have a crack research team. He's called Rashi. And my crack research team tells me there is no such pasuk. So look at the top Rashi on the page. V'lo ta'anas Shiloh. Chafashtiv. So Rashi says, I did the research. Okay. I trust Rashi. Rashi wrote a parish on off Tanakh. Right, Rashi knows what he's speaking about. V'lo matzasiv b'mikra, and I did not find this pasuk in all of Tanakh. Okay, good. Ava matzasiv mizrachat Tanashilo. However, in Yehoshua, when the land was divided, so we are given locations throughout the Torah, throughout all of Eretz Yisrael, in terms of right, this sheva got this, and this sheva got that. And so Rashi points to one of the pesukim over there. It's funny, when people learn Yehoshua, they stop at Perikud Beis. Right, the 24 prakim in Yehoshua, Sefer Yehoshua. So the storyline ends in Perikud Beis, and from that point forward, it's all geography. It's all, he was given this, and he was given this, and so that's pretty much where people check out. Rashi doesn't check out at that point in time. Rashi knows the second half of Sefer Yehoshua, as well as he knows the first half, and he knows the first half pretty well. So anyway, so the pasuk says, Mizracha Ta'anat Shiloh. So there's a place called Ta'anat Shiloh. Okay. So that's what the Gemara must be referring to.
Wait, he said it's not the Mikra, then he says that it is the Mikra.
No, the pasuk that the Gemara is quoting. The Gemara quotes a pasuk, V'lo Ta'anat Shiloh. So Rashi says that doesn't exist. But there is a place called Ta'anat Shiloh. Okay, but the way the Gemara is quoting the pasuk, it doesn't... Okay. So Makom Shekol HaRo'osa Mit'anech Alav Al Achilas Kachim Shalom. And the Gemara gives a pshat. And the Gemara gives the following pshat. You walk by Shiloh after Shiloh's been destroyed and you sigh. Right? The word Mit'anech means to sigh. You let out a sigh. Because now we have this whole Yerushalayim thing. Now I know it sounds like funny, like we're gonna cry, but it's human nature. We're wired this way. Meaning when we pass Shiloh, we're gonna remember, oh my gosh, it used to be I didn't have to be in the walls of Shiloh. All I needed to do was just simply see Shiloh, and that would be enough. And here in Yerushalayim, we have to be within the walls, and I can't be outside the wall. And okay, that's the. So in other words, there's a benefit to Shiloh that we miss. Rabbi Abba Amar Kra, Ben Parat Yosef, Ben Parat Alei Ayin. Bracha that Yaakov gave to Yosef, where you look at Rashi and the Pasuk, okay, Yosef was very attractive, right? All the women would go up onto the wall and take a look at Yosef. And Ayin Shiloh Ratzasa Lazon Velayanos Midavar She'enu Shiloh Tizgev Etochel Kemlo Eineha. Gemara darshins beautifully, Mida Keneged Mida. Meaning Yosef saw Aishas Potiphar and even though he saw her, wasn't hers, wasn't his, he did not have relations with her, he did not succumb to his Yetzirah Hara, So in other words, he fought his ayin. He fought his eye. And the reward that he got for that was Shiloh, which is built in the territory of Yosef. So it has a special halacha that all you need to do is see Shiloh and you're able to eat your kachim. Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Chanina, Amar Ratzon, Ratzon Shochniset Isneh. So the Gemara gives another similar drasha. Over here we're going to go to the bracha that Moshe gave to Yosef. Ratzon Shochniset Ayn Shalom Ratzon Salayanos Midav Shena Shalom Tizkev Tochal Bein Hasnuim. The way Rashi explains this, those who hated Yosef, meaning his brothers, right? So you can be sitting in another person's shevet and still eat your kachim. Meaning as long as you're seeing Shiloh, and Rashi says, as far as the eye could see, and so you could be not even in the territory of Yosef, even in one of the territories of his hated brothers, right? And as long as you see Shiloh, you could still eat over there. That's the pshat in Ritzon Shochni Sneh. Shochni comes from the word Shachay, neighbor, Sneh, Sinah. Right? Even the neighboring hated territories. Tana, we learned on a brisa, Rosh Amar Ra Kula V'lo Hamasbik. Sorry. V'lo Hamafsik Beino Leveino. You have to have an uninterrupted line of view of Shiloh. So Amalei Rabbi Shimon ben Eliakim le Rabbi Elazar as balach gagon bekenishta de Maon, right? Gives an example, the shul of Maon. Now I don't know territorially, that's a terrible word. Geographically, I don't know where Maon is, but the point is that apparently Maon had a view, an unobstructed view to Shiloh, and he gave that as an example. Amar Papa Rosh Amar Lo Ro Kula Lo Ro Miksaso. Okay? You don't have to see all of Shiloh. If you see some of it, that would be sufficient. What if you see it standing but not sitting? Okay? What if on the riverbank you could see it, but in the river itself you can't see it? Teku. On both of these questions, Gemara leaves these questions unresolved. And again, I'll repackage my question that I made earlier today. It's interesting that the Gemara asks these questions about Shiloh. Shiloh no longer exists and will never have anything like Shiloh. Although, to be fair, though, we have other halachas that are site contingent. I'll give you two quick examples. One is reading the Megillah, right? The Gemara tells us in the beginning of Megillah that as long as you could see Yerushalayim or any walled city, so you read the Megillah on the 15th, on the 14th. So we have that as a site contingent halacha. And also, another one that comes to my mind is benching. Right? When can I put two groups together in order to make a zimun? So you have one group has to see the other group. So again, so there we have two halachas where we have this idea of seeing. A little bit more for this morning. Ki asa Rav Dimi, I'm a Rebbe. B'shloshim mekamash sharta shechina al Yisrael. Three places where the shechina rested on the Jewish people. Shiloh, Nova Givon, Ubeis Olamim. Funny, Novan Givon like turn into one, it blends into one, even though they're two different cities. Novan Givon and Beis Olamim. Uvekulam lo sharta ela bechelek binyamin. Now, all this was in Chelek binyamin. Now, you should wonder to yourself, because we've been assuming up until now that Shiloh was in the territory of Yosef. That was the drushes that we had in the top of the page. Shenamar chofef alav kol hayom, koch fifos lo yehu ela bechelek osha binyamin. Good.
Isn't Nov like south of Israel?
Nov, I don't know. I don't know.
What about the drasha when they both cried on each other?
Okay, so ki azal Abaye Amar kama de Rav Yosef. So Abaye heard this. What a beautiful drush, and Abaye passes it on to his Rebbe Rav Yosef. Amar. Now Rav Yosef's answer goes like this. Now it's going to be a little sharp. I'm just warning everybody. It almost will seem insensitive. So Amar kama de Rav Yosef. Amar. So Rav Yosef, when he hears this, that the Shekhinah of Kadosh Baruch Hu rested on three locations, all were in the territory of Binyamin, and Rav Yosef was told this by Abaye. So he says like this, Chad bra havale lechayael. So Chayael had one son. He was talking about Abaye. Remember, Abaye is an orphan. Abaye's mother died right after birth, and Abaye's father died right after conception. So he never knew his parents. But Rav Yosef knew him, and he said, you know, Chayil had one son, and that would be you. Velo mitkin, and really, it's such a shame because you're not all put together. Told you it's going to be a little rough. and Bai is an orphan. I mean, like, you know. The Aksiv, the pasuk says, "Vayitosh Mishkan Shilo Uksiv Vayimaz Be'Ol Yosef V'Shevet Ephraim Lo Bachar." It's pretty clear that the Shilo Mishkan was not in the territory of Binyamin, but rather was in the territory of Yosef / Ephraim. So where did that come from? So Amar Rav Ada Maika Kashle Dama Shechina Bechelak Binyamin V'Sanhedrin Gedola Bechelak Yosef. Well, maybe we could say like this. Maybe in Shiloh it straddled two territories. Maybe the actual tabernacle itself was in the Chelak of Binyamin, where meanwhile the Sanhedrin, which was right next to the tabernacle, was in the Chelak of Yosef. And remember, we had that in Yerushalayim. Correct. The split between Binyamin and Yehuda. Mi de Matzino, the Gemara says, that's precedented. Bevei Salamim, Dishchina Bechalkus of Binyamin, Sanhedrin Bechalk Yehuda. So Amalei Hachi Hashta. The Gemara says, come on. I'm not going to buy that. Hasam Hikra V'Nachlos Gabi Hadade. There we know for a fact that Yehuda and Binyamin were contiguous. We know that as a fact. But Hachamim Mekarvan, but you don't know. You don't know if the tribe of Binyamin and the tribe of Ephraim are contiguous from one to another. The Gemara says, no, I do know that as the fact. Kid the Amar Rabbi Chama Bar Chanina, Rav Tzvi Ha'isa Yotze Mechelkos Yehuda, V'nechnas Mechelkos of Binyamin. So the Gemara says that the Ritzua Haisa Yotze Michalkos Yehuda, right, we have a strip coming out of Yehuda, Nechlasa Chalkos Binyamin, Ma, Uva Yamizbech Mano, Vahayi Binyamin, Atzalik Mitzar Alav Labala, and Binyamin wanted that piece of land. Hachanami Ritzua Haisa Yotze Michalkos Yosef, the Chalkos Binyamin. So over here, we'll make the same argument that Yosef Binyamin, again, there was a little bit of encroachment on the territory of Yosef into Binyamin, behind the Dechsiv, Ta'ana Shilo. Now we're going to go back to that pasuk that we quoted in the beginning of at the top of the daf, top of the amud, Ta'anat Shilo. So Ta'anat Shilo means, right, like a sigh. Like, I wish I had some of that land. So the Gemara now presents it as somewhat of a debate, certainly a little more complex in terms of where was Shilo? Was Shilo in the tribe of Binyamin? Or was Shiloh in the tribe of Yosef? Up until this point in time, we assumed that Shiloh was in the tribe of Yosef, and the Gemara says that may not be so clear. Maybe that Binyamin also had some of Shiloh as well. Okay, we'll pause over here in the Gemara. Okay, we'll continue tomorrow. Finish up with the Shiloh discussion, and we'll move on to the Beis HaMikdash discussion. Novin Givon also coming up. A lot of good stuff.